Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, September 21st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, people in St. Cloud rally for unity and the debate over a $15 an hour minimum wage. The FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force is now leading the investigation into the mass stabbing Saturday at a St. Cloud mall. As the city is reeling from the sudden violence and concerns of rising tension, St. Cloud State University students responded with a rally. Peter Cox has the story.
Mubarak Ibrahim went to junior high, high school, and a few years of college with Tahir Aden.
He was just like everyone else, I guess. We played basketball together. We went to school together. We hung out at the Southside Boys and Girls Club together almost every day after school, you know?
So when he heard that Aden was identified as the person who hurt 10 people in a knife attack at Crossroads Center Mall and then was shot to death, Ibrahim was shocked.
Many of us were just thinking, no way, no way. I've known this guy for how long, you know? Nothing have I ever seen him do anything out of the ordinary. He was one of the people that you didn't hear that had did this and that. You know, you don't hear about him doing negative things. And someone like that just all of a sudden is involved in something like this. I mean, it's crazy to hear about.
Ibrahim was not alone in his confusion. That's why he and many of his classmates joined in a rally at St. Cloud State. They said it was for unity and understanding. Student Barwako Dreer offered thanks that no more people were hurt.
St. Cloud isn't a perfect city, and it certainly isn't made up of perfect people. It isn't the best or the worst place to raise a family, but it is home. It's our home. And the people of this town are our family, regardless of race, religion, or background. I challenge you to see the beauty that is here. Speak life into your city and its people. I challenge you to pray and love.
More than 200 people gathered outside to hear speakers, including the St. Cloud police chief, the mayor, the school's interim president, and a campus security officer, Lieutenant Zach Rieger. Rieger said there have been no on-campus incidents of retaliation, but he urged students to call security if they feel unsafe.
This is what St. Cloud looks like!
The rally turned into a march, winding its way through campus. Afterward, two students urged everyone to hug.
I've honestly never been a part of anything like this.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Thank you.
Travis Pinney works as a paraprofessional at a St. Cloud elementary school.
After this weekend, after seeing my friends of every culture impacted, I just, you can't stand by the sidelines forever. You know, you've got to start being a part of what you want at some point. And this is it. This is our starting point.
The FBI also announced a starting point yesterday that its Joint Terrorism Task Force would take over the investigation with assistance from the St. Cloud Police Department. A spokesman for the FBI says the task force specializes in, quote, methodical long-range investigations. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Cloud.
Muslim leaders met yesterday with a southern Minnesota business owner who put up a sign saying, "Muslims, get out," in front of his restaurant. Matt Sepik reports.
Dan Reedinger, owner of Treats Family Restaurant in Lonsdale, posted the sign following Saturday's mass stabbing attack at a St. Cloud mall. Authorities say a young Somali man wounded 10 people before an off-duty policeman fatally shot him. Reedinger says his message is not directed at Muslims in general, only extremists. But Reedinger says he couldn't fit that word on the sign. Jaylani Hussein with the Council on American Islamic Relations went to the restaurant. He says Reedinger was cordial but would not agree to remove the sign.
We weren't there to change his mind. We were there to start a conversation, and I think we accomplished that.
Hussein says he told Reedinger that Muslims are in the majority of those killed by terrorist organizations. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Supporters of a faculty union at the University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus have won a key victory over the size of a potential bargaining unit. Solveig Wastvedt reports.
The State Bureau of Mediation Services sided with faculty who petitioned for a union to include tenure-track faculty and their so-called contingent colleagues who work short-term contracts. The university objected, saying the groups don't have the same responsibilities. Lecturer Jason Stahl supports combining the groups. Stahl says while some contingent faculty may not conduct research, the groups have the same teaching duties.
We are teaching the exact same classes. We are teaching It's the work is the same. We are doing the same instructional work.
The university said in a statement it's reviewing the decision. A date has not been set for a union vote. Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A top Republican in the Minnesota House says nearly $80,000 in severance payments to some of Governor Mark Dayton's former commissioners should be returned to the state. Dayton authorized the severance to three political appointees who voluntarily resigned. The Dayton administration says the payments are allowed under state law, but Republican Representative Sarah Anderson of Plymouth says the legislature never authorized the payments. She wants the governor to ask the former commissioners to pay the money back.
If we're not able to get them to rescind the payments and do it that way, then the governor better find the money within his own budget and his office.
It isn't clear whether the state could legally collect severance that's already been paid out. A spokesman for Dayton called the request ridiculous and said the governor acted well within his legal authority. Will a $15 an hour minimum wage help or hurt people in low-paying jobs? That was the focus of a debate in Minneapolis yesterday. The push for a $15 an hour minimum wage is now a nationwide effort, although employers say it would be counterproductive. Tim Nelson has the highlights from the debate sponsored by the conservative Center of the American Experiment.
The Minnesota Supreme Court struck down a proposed ballot measure last month that would have asked voters in Minneapolis if they wanted to push the city's minimum wage for many employers to $15 an hour by 2020. But the battle over low-wage employment is grinding on. It's charged by growing alarm over income and racial disparities, gaps that are among the nation's widest here in Minnesota.
I would argue that it is a moral issue.
That's DFL State Senator John Marty of Roseville. He sponsored a bill to set a $15 an hour minimum wage in Minnesota over 5 years. He said it's easy for many people to dismiss the urgency of raising the state's current minimum wage, currently $9.50 an hour for big employers and $7.75 an hour for smaller employers and young workers.
We had single wage earners being able to support their families 40, 50 years ago. We've got people who are in a crisis now who can't make ends meet, even though they're working two and three jobs. We got to do something about it, and that is a crisis.
He told several hundred people at the Minneapolis Hilton that over the course of 70 years and nearly two dozen federal minimum wage increases, jobs have actually grown right after the hikes, even in traditionally low-wage industries like hospitality and retail.
So the record would suggest that minimum wage increases do not overall, or even in specific sectors that we'd expect it to, cost jobs.
But Mark Perry, a University of Michigan economist, responded that simple job numbers mask the market forces that minimum wage hikes bring to bear. Employers have a wide range of options to cope with a wage hike, he said, in ways that could hurt workers.
It cannot stop employers from hiring fewer unskilled workers in the future. It cannot stop firms from investing in labor-saving technologies like self-ordering kiosks. It cannot stop firms from decreasing the amount of on-the-job training provided. It cannot stop firms from reducing or eliminating workers' non-monetary fringe benefits.
Those have long been the subject of theoretical debate. But Dan McElroy, a former Republican legislator and head of Hospitality Minnesota, gave some examples of what he said may be specific, more harmful effects in the state's 9,000 or so restaurants he represents.
It is very rare in a restaurant in a high-wage market to see anybody in the kitchen with a knife in their hand to cut an onion or a tomato or any of those things, because they're all prepped now in factories owned by Dole Pineapple and lots of other folks.
McElroy said a big jump in the minimum wage will outsource and automate some of the very entry-level jobs advocates are trying to improve. McElroy argued that could short-circuit an even better option for workers, career development and steps to better jobs.
There are no celebrity chefs who were born celebrity chefs. They learned to cook before they could create, before they could sell.
But Marty, the state senator, countered that those opportunities are available now and don't seem to be helping.
One way or another, you either have to say, I don't care if people are hurting, which I don't think is a good socially responsible thing for us as a community. You either got to say you don't care, or we got to do something about it. The minimum wage, the wage, is the most obvious one.
But Perry, the economist, disagreed.
Remember that the real minimum wage is always zero, because that is the wage that thousands, possibly millions of workers will receive following a government-mandated $15 an hour minimum wage, because they will either lose their jobs or fail to find jobs when they enter the labor force. That's a very cruel public policy.
And with advocates for higher wages already back marching in the streets in Minneapolis, That debate shows no signs of ending with last month's state Supreme Court ruling. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.